And they run through our ass like shit through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
It's ridiculous that they do. That was a huge colony. Well, we didn't miss it. You know, the typical rah, 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 zip, boom, bah, boo.
You don't cuss. You don't drink. So what are your vices?
I have been known to chew a bit of tobacco when I get a little tired or watching film.
Hey, I'm Coach O. I just love my Hummer. I have my Hummer. You need a Hummer? Tell them about it, JoJo.
They've won the biggest championship, and that's the championship of life.
Gas control. Everybody just do your job. You understand that?
Welcome in to the latest episode of That SEC Podcast. I'm your host, Michael Bratton. I go by SEC Mike on Twitter. And I'm joined, as always, by my cousin Shane, who goes by Big Orange Vols on Twitter. What are you up to, you big Tennessee homer?
Hey, buddy, what's going on?
Hey, the way I hear it, Shane, you are on the road for the national championship. Are you down in San Fran ready for this game?
Oh, not so fast, my friend. I'm down here at Disney. I'm trying to get down here before Bama shows up.
Oh, all right. Well, hey, the Magical Kingdom there, Shane, that's a pretty cool little trip, but...
Oh, yeah.
You're a hell of a podcast host here, Shane. You're recording on the road, recording from Disney, on location.
That is right, man. The kids are upset that I'm taking time away from the Mickey Mouse, but I tell you what, Mike, I need a little break, just a little break, because I tell you, man, it is a madhouse down here. I didn't know in January it'd be so busy. The craziest Walmart I've ever been to in my life is in Orlando, Florida, so... I'm ready for a break, ready to talk a little football, brother.
How many jorts you see down there?
Dude, it's covered up. I'm telling you, it's the wildest Walmart I ever seen in my life, Mike. I'm telling you. I put my wallet from my back pocket to my front because I didn't trust anybody in there.
Well, that's a good place to start, Shane. Let's jump to Gainesville where Dan Mullen... He's got a hell of a weekend for Florida in his Gator program there, Shane. David Reese, Jabari Zuniga, Van Jefferson, Adam Shuler, LaMichael Pirine, Tyree Cleveland. After a couple of guys left early to go to the NFL, Shane, all those guys are back. And that coincided with Chris Steele at the U.S. Army All-American game, one of the best cornerback prospects in the nation. He announced his commitment to Florida. And he was one of those that we kind of touched on during the early signing period, Shane. Apparently, Steele signed with the Gators, just kind of kept it quiet, wanted to hold that off, wanted to reveal it on national television there. So he's already a part of the program, and he's going to be there, I believe, this weekend, and you know, enrolling early. So hell of a weekend for the Gators. What are your thoughts on all those guys coming back?
Dude, I'm telling you what, man. They're rallying something crazy, something fierce down there in Florida. All these people calling them out, saying they want the University of Florida. You got Dan, got his players breaking down in the locker room, talking about how great a coach he is. They finished the season with 10 wins. I'm telling you, man, Florida may be a sneaky team in the East next year, brother.
Yeah, so Florida still does lead the SEC, Shane, in guys that have declared early for the NFL. They've got five guys that left. And I think that's why this was so big for them, because you can't have those five and then, you know, these five or six guys announcing too. I mean, that would have devastated their team. Not a ton of playmakers here, although Van Jefferson, Tyree Cleveland, those guys are really good. LaMichael Pirine, I think he really started to come on, so definitely not discouraging any of these guys. I mean, all these guys could be, you know, the core of the team next year, so it's great news for the Gators. And on the flip side, Shane, even better potentially for Gators. Let's jump to Athens. They had quite a few defections, Shane. Justin Fields, obviously, he made it official. He's headed to Ohio State. You got Elijah Holyfield, Riley Ridley, Isaac Nada. I mean, so many guys jumping here. Luke Ford, he made his transfer official. Although on the flip side, Shane, Hot Rod and J.R. Reed, they're coming back. So they got two guys back, but any concern there, do you think, for the Bulldogs losing so many guys here? And this all came out on Friday.
Well, there for a little bit, man, it felt like a sinking ship, you know, just everybody getting out. And, you know, you got to realize Georgia's extremely deep, especially at that running back position. So I think they'll be fine there. I think we knew Fields was going to be gone. So I don't think too many people are worried down there in Athens, but you hate to see it because some of these players – probably needed another year of development, and who knows what kind of product they could have put on the field if some of these guys would have decided to come back, you know?
Yeah, and I think, obviously, the disappointing Sugar Bowl performance, there's kind of a bad taste in Georgia fans' mouths right now.
Mm-hmm.
And I did note this on Twitter, Shane. I think this is probably the first real test of the Kirby Smart era down there in Athens. Some people have taken exception to me saying that. And I think it's compounded, obviously, by the loss of Justin Fields and all the hype that he got coming in there.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I did predict, Shane, that Georgia would lose the Sugar Bowl. I'm probably going to say that for about 8 months because I was that's one of the few bowl games I got right.
You got it right.
But at the same time, Shane, I also have said this because I thought it reminded me of Alabama going against Utah. It reminded me of Alabama going against Oklahoma and both those bowl game disappointments.
Mm-hmm.
What did Alabama turn around and do from that loss, Shane? The Utah loss, Alabama turned around and won the national championship. After that Oklahoma loss, they came around and they were number one all year. They did lose in the playoff, but they made the playoff. So I'm certainly not saying, you know, doom and gloom for Georgia. I think, if anything, I think this, you know, obviously Kirby didn't want to lose that game, but I think he'll use it as motivation all off season. And I tried to tell this to other people too. Outside of Alabama, outside of Clemson, I think Georgia's going to have the best roster in the nation, and it may even be as good as those teams because they've been signing a hell of a class back to back to back. So there's no danger for me right now with Georgia. I think everything is going to be all right, but at the same time, I stand by that statement to say it will be the first test. I'm not saying they're going to fail it, but it is a situation to monitor, I think.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, man. As a coach, Kirby, I mean, he's a hell of a recruiter, but, you know, it's sometimes the hardest recruiting that you have to do is keeping your guys on your team, you know, keeping them from going to the NFL. And I think he's kind of failed in that regard, you know. Just, you know, you're talking about unfinished business. If he could have portrayed that to some of these guys, I think he could have got some of them back on the roster next year. I think he kind of let a few get away here because we're not talking these guys leaving, some of these guys leaving for the first round. You know, some of these guys are going to be third, fourth round picks. And, you know, if you could have coached them up and maybe gave them the thought that maybe they would be a higher round pick if they stuck around, that's my only concern. But mm-hmm. The running back position is a little thinner than I thought going into this draft, so maybe that's something that played a role too.
Well, and you also got to give Kirby credit though, Shane, because after his first year, remember, they had so many guys stay. They had Nick Chubb, Sony Michel.
Yeah.
I mean, so he's had it before, but one thing you did kind of, I hadn't thought about this until you said it. One thing that I thought was interesting with J.R. Reed coming back, that's similar to DeAndre Baker last year. Maybe, I may be reading too much into this, but it seems like maybe he's got a better grasp of keeping the defensive players because they trust him, whereas a lot of these guys they left, receivers, tight ends, running backs, I don't want to say they lack confidence in the offense or Jim Chaney, but I wonder if that played a part into it to maybe they just realized, you know, we've done all we can do and we're not going to progress quite like, I mean, look at a guy like DeAndre Baker. He came back. He's probably going to be a top 10 pick learning Kirby Smart's defense.
Absolutely. And I can't remember who was, I think it was Chip Kelly the other day. He was talking about, you know, like learning how to be a coach. And the thing about some of these defensive coaches is how much time do they spend on that side of the ball? You know, Chip Kelly says, you've got to act like you've got two girlfriends on that field. One's on offense, one's on defense. You know what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. You got to be sure not to spend too much time with one or you're going to lose the other. So maybe that had something to do with it here toward the end of the season. He spent maybe a little too much time with the defense, didn't, you know, build that relationship like he had with those defenders that are coming back, you know?
Final thing I got on Georgia here, Shane. Now, I don't want to read too much into this, but I feel like we got to talk about it. According to Jason LaContour, old dude from CBS, he's saying that Tampa Bay Buccaneers are interested in Kirby Smart. He's not saying that, you know, he's not saying Kirby Smart's the main target. He's not even mm-hmm. saying that they've offered him a job or anything, but I just thought it was interesting because Kirby Smart does not strike me as an NFL guy. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on that. Kirby Smart mentioned as a candidate for the Bucs.
I don't think it hurts to go after him, but I really just don't see him leaving that situation in Georgia because, even though the season didn't finish like they want to, I mean, he's got a really good thing going there. I doubt he leaves, but yeah, it doesn't surprise me. You know, I mean, you always go for it. I'm surprised Nick's not on more of these phone calls. You know what I'm saying?
All right, Shane, let's.
Hey, let me ask you something. One of the crazy things, I don't know, this is kind of a little off subject, but you know, they had the little fight there before the game with the Bulldog and with Bevo. Did you see what PETA's doing? PETA is calling to end all live mascots on the sideline. So you think Coach Leach would be – he'd come unglued if he found out no live mascots are on the sideline.
I'm just going to go out on a ledge here, Shane. I do not think Coach Leach is a member of PETA.
No, he loves them mascots, man. He wants a live cougar on the sideline, Mike.
One other news, Shane, I got here on NFL Draft, guys. This was surprising, I thought. Auburn's defensive lineman, a junior, Derrick Brown. I think he's their best defensive lineman, Shane. Projected first-round pick. He announced he's returning. You know, of course, certainly he can improve his stock. Maybe, you know, from what NFL draft experts are saying, this is going to be an incredibly deep defensive line class for upcoming NFL draft. So it may actually be really smart for him to hold off a year, maybe improves his game, and then he becomes the number one defensive lineman. Any thoughts on Derrick Brown, the former five-star recruit who's lived up to the hype, returning to Auburn for his senior year?
That's awesome, man. That's a big get for them because there was a lot of people, I don't know if you remember, at the start of the season thought he'd be one of the top 5-10, you know, people picked off the board. So
right.
I don't think the season went exactly like he planned, but I don't think he fell that far either. So, big get keeping him around for his senior year.
All right, Shane, let's show up to Knoxville. Where there's a lot of interesting rumors here, Shane, connecting Jim Chaney. We talked about it on the previous podcast, to Tennessee. And it's starting to heat up, Shane. I mean, Jimmy Himes, WNML there in Knoxville, he's saying, I can't remember exactly how he put it. You can go on his website and read his article, but it's basically said Chaney is in play. He didn't say he's on his way there or anything, but he didn't think that was a viable option, but now it is. And I've been told that the Rivals Georgia site is reporting that Jim Chaney has been offered the Tennessee offensive coordinator position. They're not saying he's leaving. They're not saying, you know, he wants it. I'm not a member there, so that's just what I've been told. So thoughts on that? How pleased would you be if Jeremy Pruitt were able to pull this one off and take Georgia's offensive coordinator, Jim Chaney?
I tell you what, Mike, there's a lot of smoke. And, you know, usually when there's smoke, there's fire. And this thing feels like it's kind of heating up because you got two different parties here. You got a lot of heavy hitters at Tennessee that really would love to have Jim Chaney back. And then on the opposite side, I'm seeing a lot of negativity from up top about Jim Chaney and the play calling he had in the Sugar Bowl. So, and the quarterback controversy. So I don't know how much Jim had to do with that than it did Kirby, but you know, there's some upset Georgia fans, and I'm sure there's some happy. I'm sure there's a lot of fans there in Georgia that love to keep Jim Chaney. So I tell you, the comments that I read, what they're really worried about, if Chaney leaves, that Pittman goes with him. Do you think there's any shot that this is a package deal?
Meaning Sam Pittman to Tennessee?
Yeah, let's just say, for instance, that Chaney did – let's say he did take this offer. Is there any chance that Pittman would come with him? Because I tell you what, now – I mean, you talk about squirming. Georgia does not want to lose that man.
No, I don't think there's any chance, Shane, because for the simple fact that Jeremy Pruitt is so tied to his buddy Will Friend.
Yeah.
I mean, they're BFFs, Shane. And
he may sink on that ship, brother. He won't give up, will he?
Well, Shane, I'll tell you what, of course, Sam Pittman is also recruiting Darnell Wright, but he's a big reason why they got Wanya Morris. He's a big reason they got probably going to sign Darnell Wright. I mean, he's a hell of a recruiter, too, and there was a time. People have very short memories, Shane, but I think before Sam Pittman got to Tennessee, I mean, I don't think he was that well-regarded. I mean, he was after he left because he developed a hell of an offensive line. You know what I mean? Yeah. So you got to give these coaches, I think, a chance to get their guys in there. I don't think that obviously Will Friend probably doesn't have a great reputation in Knoxville right now, but I don't think he had anything to work with either. So he's kind of, while he's a question mark, I certainly don't think you want to get rid of him. And I mean, I've even heard Jeremy Pruitt say that he thinks the top two offensive line coaches in the nation are Sam Pittman and Will Friend. So I don't even think he would consider bringing Sam Pittman on if that meant kicking Will Friend off the offensive line.
Well, I tell you what, man, I watched that Under Armour game, and, you know, you made a – I think you put a tweet out there talking about that Ole Miss running back breaking the record, didn't you? Mm-hmm. What's his name?
I believe his name is Ely, Jerrion Ely. He's committed to Ole Miss, but it's not – he didn't sign during the early signing period. He's been visiting Mississippi State, and the big thing with him, Shane,
yeah,
he apparently is a big Major League Baseball prospect.
Yeah, I heard he may be a first rounder.
Right. So the thing, I think the, you know, logic says, is he going to turn down a lot of money to play college football? I don't know. I think if he gets that money, not that I've heard him say this or anything, but it's just going to be tough to pass that up if he gets drafted that highly. And I think that's kind of why he hasn't signed with anyone yet.
Well, I say all that to say this, Mike. Maybe he was the leading rusher because he had Morris and Wright blocking for him. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, so both those guys started the Under Armour All-American game along with five-star offensive tackle Evan Neal, who signed with Alabama. That's a big boy. Talking 3 5-stars up front. I mean, there's no wonder Ely went off on such a big day. But
I think Neal's got to be 400 pounds, Mike. I'm telling you, he looked like Jim Chaney out there.
Yeah, he's about 6'8", I think. I think he's listed at about 380. So you may be right. I think if he gets down to Tuscaloosa, they're going to chisel him down a little bit. But he looks like the next great left tackle there at Alabama, right, for sure.
Big old boy.
Final thing I had on Tennessee, Shed, I wanted to get your thoughts on this. Outside linebacker Jordan Allen, apparently he put his name there in the NCAA transfer portal. But he's pulled it out. He's staying at Tennessee. He's not considering leaving. And this was a guy they signed out of California last year out of junior college. He's one of those guys with 3 years to play. So he's still got quite a bit of time there in Knoxville. But apparently the reason, big reason for him considering leaving, wanted to return home, kind of closer to mom. I think his mom, I know this for a fact, his mom's been dealing with cancer treatments. You know, she's been having difficulty, Shane, but apparently he reached out to his mother and told him about wanting to transfer closer to home. And did you hear what she told him there, Shane?
I did. She said, say it.
Mama ain't raised no punk. Tennessee it is. So I'm sure she was a huge factor in his decision to ultimately sign with Tennessee and play for Jeremy Pruitt a year ago. And, you know, her message to him, she posted this on social media, was just the fact that if you can't cut it at Tennessee, how are you going to cut it in the NFL, which is your goal? So, I mean, that's a strong message. Everybody gets homesick. I think anyone can relate to that. But I just thought it was pretty cool how she shut that down and just basically said, stick to your plan or otherwise you're not going to amount to anything.
I love it, man. I love it. That's a good story. I hope his mom does better, too.
Obviously, we got a national championship game to talk here. But before we do that, I had an interesting conversation we recorded here with Stephen Lassen, Shane. And for those who are unfamiliar with Stephen, he is the college football editor for Athlon Sports. If you haven't followed his work, he legitimately is the most knowledgeable college football expert I've ever met. I mean, this guy has an encyclopedic knowledge, Shane, on all the teams. He's the guy on Athlon Sports. I mean, he'll list, you know, the top quarterbacks from number 1 to 130, and he's not bullshitting. He legitimately knows all these guys. He writes the college football preview
like
magazine.
Rain Man.
Yeah, he's the college football Rain Man is exactly what he is, Shane. So I wanted to get him on the podcast, get his thoughts on the national championship. And the other reason I wanted to have him on, and we'll discuss it after this interview, but Athlon wrote their early top 25 for the college football rankings for 2019, their preseason rankings, Shane. And we have, we got 7 in the top 23, Shane, and 2 just outside the top 25. So SEC is going to be loaded here, Shane. So let's jump to this interview with Stephen Lassen of Athlon Sports. We're going to break down the national championship, break down the way too early top 25, and then you and I will discuss it after that.
Okay.
All right, we're happy to welcome Stephen Lassen to the podcast. Of course, he's a college football editor for Athlon Sports, and he's a senior editor for the Athlon Sports College Football Preview Magazine. You can follow Stephen at @AthlonStephen on Twitter. Thanks so much for joining us, Stephen. We really appreciate it.
Hey, Mike. It's great to talk to you. Appreciate you having me on. And, you know, it's kind of hard to believe. We've hit the end of the season already, but hopefully a good game on Monday night, and never too early to think about next year, too.
Yeah, absolutely. And I got to give you guys a ton of credit. Well, first of all, I got to say Athlon is my favorite annual college football magazine. You know, as soon as it hits the shelves, that's always like, that's like my Christmas in the summer, because you know college football's right around the corner. And, you know, if I'm not mistaken, you guys are the most accurate preseason magazine for several years running. And I think my favorite thing of the magazine, Stephen, it does not require a key code or a magnifying glass to read the thing.
Yeah, we are the most accurate magazine, I think, over the last 3, 5, and maybe 10 years now. Mm-hmm. You know, of course, you know, there's some websites who do a really good job too, and you add those in there. We've been one of the top ones over the last couple of years. So, you know, I hate to spike the football too much, but we've been doing pretty well in our preseason predictions. But, you know, I will say it's a fun process, because, you know, once one season ends, we're already starting predictions and discussions for next year. And so, you know, I've already started working on 2019 magazine stuff, and, you know, I'll work on that, you know, through February, March, and right up until, you know, the April, May press deadlines. But, you know, it's an exciting time when we get to talk about features and predictions and previews. And so we spend a lot of time arguing and debating, and fingers crossed that we can be the most accurate again next season.
Well, you guys really nailed it this year, of course. Alabama, Clemson in the college football playoff national championship game, as predicted by Athlon in the preseason. The only mark I got a note on you here, Stephen, you had Clemson in the Orange Bowl, Alabama in the Cotton Bowl. I mean, besides that, you guys nailed it perfectly, so kudos to you guys. But let's jump into that game. And, you know, the big thing on my mind is obviously these quarterbacks. I mean, I'm even hearing some people saying Trevor Lawrence, Tua Tagovailoa, potentially back-to-back number one NFL draft picks when they are eligible to come out for the draft. Which quarterback do you think will have a bigger game on Monday?
You know, I'm really looking forward to seeing these quarterbacks play, because, you know, as you mentioned, the NFL draft, but I even think next season there's your Heisman front runner and probably your second place, you know, preseason prediction. So, I mean, I think these two quarterbacks, if they're not there by the start of next season, by the end of 2019, a pretty good chance these are the best two in college football. But, you know, I think when you look at this matchup, what's interesting is both quarterbacks have favorable, I think, potential against secondaries. When you look at Clemson, the way that South Carolina and Texas A&M move the ball against their secondary, and if you're Alabama, if you can protect Tua, those receivers and Irv Smith should be able to find, you know, plenty of room against that secondary. I do think Clemson is the defensive line for Clemson, you know, is going to be the best that Alabama has seen this season. And the fact that Alabama did give up some pressure and some sacks against Mississippi State and, you know, of course, Georgia and LSU that had some success too, that has to concern you, I think, if you're Alabama. But I think for Clemson, you know, Notre Dame got some pressure early on by bringing different looks, some blitzes. I think Alabama's going to try to do that too. And I think Quinnen Williams is going to be a handful for Clemson's offensive line. So, you know, I think both quarterbacks are going to be playing at a high level on Monday night. But if I had to pick one that I think will be the difference maker, to me, it's Tua. I just think the way that he played against Oklahoma, sure, their defense has been struggling all year, but he looked pretty healthy to me. And I think if he can, you know, find enough time to throw, don't hold on to the ball too long, I think there are going to be plenty of plays to be made on Monday night. And what hopefully I think will be a fairly entertaining game, and probably will be high scoring too.
So it sounds like you might be leaning a little bit there, Alabama, in the passing game. What about the running game for both of these teams when, of course, you have to factor in the defenses for each side? I don't know about you, Steven, but for me, Clemson's front seven, I think they've been a little bit more impressive against the run this year. Which team do you think will have the rushing edge on Monday night?
You know, that's a really good question, because I think when you look at the way Alabama, you know, ran the ball last week, and without Deonte Brown, certainly against Clemson, against Oklahoma defensive line and Clemson's defensive line, there's a pretty big difference in how those two groups are going to be performing. So it is going to be a challenge, I think, if you're Alabama, to just line up and play smash mouth football like they did against Oklahoma. But, you know, I think the waves that Alabama can send, whether it's Damian Harris, Najee Harris, you have Josh Jacobs, I think they can afford to be a little patient in the running game. And certainly the way that Clemson plays defense by rotating in a lot of guys, they're not going to wear down. But you know, you start adding the rushing attempts up by the fourth quarter, you know, if Najee Harris has been hitting some runs, and then you add Josh Jacobs, it'll be interesting to see if Clemson by the end of the fourth quarter is still stuffing the run. But, you know, I think if you're Clemson, you have to like that matchup, the way that this defense has played all year. Even though Dexter Lawrence is out, Albert Huggins played well against Notre Dame. I think on the flip side for Clemson, you know, I think if there's an advantage for Alabama, I do think it is Quinnen Williams, Isaiah Buggs, and Raekwon Davis against that Clemson offensive line. And, you know, that group has been good this season, but, you know, this is going to be the best defensive line they face this season. So I'm curious to see how they hold up. And I think stopping the run for Alabama, Travis Etienne is, you know, he doesn't have a ton of rushing attempts this season when you compare him to everyone else. But what he's great at doing is that he turns the 4-yard runs into the 60-yard touchdowns. So I think if you're Alabama, the objective would be to keep him in those, you know, 2-3-yard runs and don't allow the big plays. So, you know, I think it's a fantastic matchup on both sides of it. But if one side could have a big advantage, I mean, I think you kind of have to like Quinnen Williams against Clemson's offensive line. But at the same time, really hard to I think if you're Clemson to not like your matchup, I guess, against you know, Alabama's offensive line. So I think it's pretty even. I do think Clemson is going to have a handful against Quinnen Williams, though.
Well, let me ask you about special teams, because I think that's the unit obviously that gets most overlooked, particularly when you're going into these matchups with potentially huge explosive offenses and star defensive players. But if this is a tight game, you know, Alabama, their entire kicking game, in my opinion, not only the place kicking, but the punting, has been really subpar, to say the least. Do you think there's a chance that Alabama special teams kind of cost them this title game?
You know, I think it's certainly a concern. I mean, Alabama hasn't played in too many close games at all this season. And you go back to the national championship last year, where they had an opportunity to win with a field goal, and of course it was missed. And, you know, this is, you know, it's been a problem off and on for Alabama. So I do think in a close game where you have two quarterbacks who are playing at a high level, a lot of skill talent, and both defenses that match up well or relatively, that it is going to come down to probably a couple things. It could come down to special teams, could come down to turnovers. So, yeah, absolutely. I think if you're Alabama, I think you are concerned about, you know, field goal kicking and punting and coverage and all that. It'll be interesting to see, because I think if, you know, in a tight game, you know, does maybe one coach tend to go for it on fourth down a little bit more, maybe to not kick a long field goal? So it'll be an X factor. I think that's for sure.
Now, final question I have on the game for you, Steven. Alabama, both coordinators, first-year coordinators there at Alabama. Clemson, a much more experienced set of coordinators there for Dabo. Do you think that plays a factor into the game at all, or do you think those kind of storylines are overrated at this point in the season?
You know, I to be honest with you, I really haven't thought a lot about that, but it is an interesting angle that Brent Venables, you could argue, one of the top 2 to 3 defensive coordinators in college football, and Alabama has just turned over its coordinators in recent years. But I think for Alabama, you know, I think the main, you know, the coordinators may change but the guy at the top doesn't. And with Saban there, you know what to expect out of that defense. And offensively, Mike Locksley, I think Dan Enos is maybe one of the more underrated coordinators in college football too. So I don't think it's going to make a big difference. And I think just especially with Nick Saban being on the sidelines, I mean, that's a huge, I think, advantage for Alabama just to have that. Everyone else may change, but the guy at the top just keeps Alabama going.
All right, now I'm going to put you on the spot. Who do you got winning the game?
You know, I've gone back and forth because I think Clemson's defensive line is going to have a lot of success. But I also think Alabama offensively with those receivers will be tough to match up with. So I've gone back and forth. I think I'm going to take Clemson to cover, but I'm going to take Alabama to win. I just think Tua, Nick Saban, and I think Quinnen Williams makes one play late in the fourth quarter that gets a key stop for Alabama. So give me the Crimson Tide to win it all once again.
All right. No, the big reason I wanted to have you on, Steven, you just wrote you're way too early, top 25 college football rankings for 2019, and that can be found at athlonsports.com under their college football section. Really well done article here by you, Steven. You've got several SEC teams on this list, including many of the top 10. I'm just going to run down your SEC teams here located on your top 25. You got Alabama, number one, no surprise there. Georgia, number three. Florida, number seven. LSU, number nine. Texas A&M, number 10. Missouri, number 20. And rounding out the top 23 here, Auburn. So once again, you just see it kind of Alabama, Georgia dominating the SEC, you think, next year?
Yeah, I do. You know, I think it's, you know, we're heading to this point where Alabama and Georgia are pretty much the preseason favorite in the SEC. I think that it'll be that way the next couple of years. You know, I think if you're Florida, you're at least getting into that conversation because of, I think Dan Mullen's just a heck of a coach. And, you know, if Florida starts recruiting well or better too, mm-hmm. You know, Florida is certainly going to be a top 10 team on a consistent basis. But right now, Alabama and Georgia, I think, are a step ahead. And I think what's interesting too is when you look nationally, Alabama, Clemson, 1 and 2 again, and you have, I think, a drop off to number 3, and then you get kind of outside the top 10 and you get to like number 12, 13, and you have another drop off. So like this season, I think the top of college football, we know who those guys are, but the middle is where all the questions come in. And I just think no question at the top for Alabama, Georgia, they're the favorites. And I think you have to like the chances of Florida, LSU, and A&M of cracking the top 10 this year or next season.
Now, you do have Florida third best in the SEC in this way too early top 25, you know, number 7 overall, ahead of LSU number 9, Texas A&M number 10. Is that a product of Florida being in the SEC East and maybe being in the weaker division? Or do you think, or were you not looking at that? You just kind of think Florida, for the time being, maybe listed slightly above LSU and Texas A&M?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think some of it probably is due to the SEC East. And looking at the West, you know, I picked LSU second right now, and A&M losing some players early to the NFL kind of makes me feel better about picking LSU second right now. The wild card, too, is Auburn in the West. So I think East has a more favorable path for Florida to kind of get to that 10-2 level. They do have to play at LSU and they have to go to Missouri next season. So a couple difficult games on that schedule. I think some concerns that I think for Florida are along the offensive line. You know, 4 starters are going to be gone. That's a group that has struggled in the last couple of years, was significantly better this season. Felipe Franks was also improved this year. I think he could be pushed by Emory Jones. They have a lot of good skill talent. And defensively, too, even though there are some losses there, I think the secondary is going to be pretty strong. Overall, I think picking Florida 7 is probably kind of an indictment of how good we feel about Dan Mullen. And, mm-hmm. and I think saw it at Mississippi State, and I think you're seeing it at Florida. I think he's a heck of a coach. I think he's one of the best in the SEC, and I think he does a good job of maximizing what he has. And I think he'll do that again next season, especially if they get better quarterback play out of Franks or Jones.
You may have just answered this next question by what you had to say about Dan Mullen, but I was going to ask you, between those three, Florida, LSU, and Texas A&M, obviously Dan Mullen, first year at Florida, Jimbo, first year at A&M, and Ed Orgeron still relatively new at LSU, but I think, you know, this was really a breakout year for him. Of those three programs, which one do you think has the brightest future? And maybe not even talking about 2019, but, you know, looking ahead to 2020, 2021, if you had to pick maybe of those three, you know, I'm not saying they're going to win the national championship, but if one of them were, which one would you pick under those current coaches to do that first in the future?
Oh, man, that's a great question. You know, if I had to pick, I would almost go with Florida, just because I think, like we talked about, the path is a little easier. Whereas if you're Texas A&M or LSU, you still have to go through Alabama in the regular season. And I think as long as Nick Saban is there, the West is going to go through Tuscaloosa. Whereas you could see Georgia, even though they're recruiting at a heck of a level, that Florida could miss Alabama during the regular season, beat Georgia, run the table, and in a one-game scenario in the SEC championship game, give Alabama their best, come up short, and make the college football playoffs as a non-champion, or beat Alabama and make the SEC or make the college football playoffs. So, I do think short term, Texas A&M is interesting because Kellen Mond I think he's going to continue to get better. Texas A&M is recruiting at a high level. I would like to see LSU's offense continue to improve. And I think that's the one area where I'm not sold yet on LSU, is I want to see that offense, especially the passing game, improve. Certainly Joe Burrow played well at the end of the year, but I think in order for LSU to get past Alabama consistently, it needs more out of its offense and its quarterback.
Now, I got to say this, Stephen, I was proud of you. Missouri, number 20. A lot of casual people, a lot of people outside of the SEC, I think they're going to look at that and they're going to raise an eyebrow. You know, they see Drew Locke, he's leaving. How could Missouri be ranked in the preseason top 20? But, you know, knowledgeable people such as yourself see what Barry Odom's building there. I mean, basically that entire offense outside of Locke should be returning. As long as Albert O returns, he could still go to the NFL. But it seems like Barry Odom's building something there at Missouri. Can you give us just a brief rundown of why you got Missouri in the top 20?
Yeah, the first thing that stands out to me about Missouri next season is a very favorable schedule. They do have to go to Georgia, but Florida and South Carolina both come to Columbia next season. Their crossover games are against Ole Miss and Arkansas. And I think you could argue they're probably going to be favored in, 8-9 games, maybe. Non-conference play, West Virginia and Wyoming are their FBS non-conference games. So there's a pretty favorable path. And, I think Drew Locke leaving, no question about it, it's a big loss. But Kelly Bryant, very capable. I think his mobility, his accuracy with the short throws, with the playmakers that Missouri has, they're going to be fine on offense, I think. The biggest question is, can the defense continue to improve? And they cut their points per game allowed this season, have a lot of players coming back next season. So I think optimistically, if you're Missouri, sure, you're going to miss Drew Locke. Kelly Bryant hopefully provides a seamless transition in there. And defensively, if they take a step forward with a favorable schedule, I think Missouri's got a chance to be 9-3 next season.
And then last two teams you got here outside your top 25, you list these as, basically just on the outside looking in. You got Mississippi State and Tennessee. I thought that was pretty surprising. I'm a little high on Tennessee too, but I wanted to ask you, You know, because Tennessee was so up and down under Jeremy Pruitt the first year, is that a, you know, what is that a product of? Maybe, you know, the second year leap you think that program's going to take? Their recruiting has done well so far under Jeremy Pruitt, and the schedule, you know, they lose that game like West Virginia and they flip it to a BYU. What are your thoughts on Tennessee and why you listed them as a team out just outside the top 25?
You know, I like the direction that Tennessee is heading. Certainly, there's a lot of room to improve, but I think we saw this season what Jeremy Pruitt can do. The fact that Tennessee ended up beating Auburn, beating Kentucky, and then, you know, at the end of the season, things didn't play out well for Tennessee to get to a bowl game. But I think there were some highlights in year one that show if Jeremy Pruitt has talent, you know, he can elevate Tennessee. And I think that, you know, certainly they've got to find an offensive coordinator. They've got to get more out of, you know, Garantano at quarterback. The offensive and defensive lines, I think, are still the biggest question mark. And I think those two groups, once they get more talent and more depth there, I think we'll see Tennessee take a step forward. But overall, I just think second year under Jeremy Pruitt, great recruiting classes now back-to-back. You add in some more talent, some talent development there. I think Tennessee will take a step forward and be a bowl team next year. You know, I wouldn't make the jump to 9-3 or anything like that. But, you know, for Tennessee to be two games better, and not to mention, you know, Mississippi State comes on the schedule without that, you know, defense that Mississippi State had this year and Nick Fitzgerald leaving. You know, I think that's a case where Tennessee could pick up a victory. They also get South Carolina at home and Vanderbilt at home. So, you know, I think if you're optimistically for Tennessee, there's a path to get to 7-5, maybe even 8-4 if things break their way. But, you know, still not there talent-wise, but I think they're getting better. And I think Pruitt, his coaching ability, I think he can squeeze an extra victory or two out of this team next season.
A final team here, you mentioned there, Mississippi State. You listed them here, and you're just outside of top 25. How concerned were you, if at all, just on that offense? Because they just were so inconsistent under Joe Moorhead. I thought, you know, obviously that was his background, that he'd come in there and he would kind of elevate what Dan Mullen had done on offense, and that certainly didn't happen. Do you have any reservations on the future of that program under Joe Moorhead?
Yeah, I do. You know, I was surprised that Mississippi State was, you know, statistically where they were on offense this season. I thought if there was any coach who could come to Mississippi State and inherit Nick Fitzgerald and turn the offense into a little bit better of a passing game, I thought it was Joe Moorhead. The one thing that I do wonder about this offense is maybe next season with a different quarterback in Keaton Thompson, if maybe the offense doesn't improve by default, just maybe because he might be a better fit. I think there are some issues at receiver. We saw it in the bowl game, drops, inconsistency. That group needs to improve. Kylan Hill, a really promising running back too, is back after a nice season. So there are pieces to work with, and I just wonder what direction can they go here. Is it, did the offense struggle because Fitzgerald was the quarterback, the passing game was inconsistent, and can they improve just by having a new quarterback and maybe a new direction under center? So that'll be the big question, and you know, not to mention, they're not going to have the elite defense that they had this season with Simmons and Sweat. And Abram gone at receiver, at safety, they're going to be missing some key cogs. So, I like Bob Shoup. I think he's one of the SEC's better defensive coordinators. But that defense is probably going to take at least a small step back. And you wonder if the offense doesn't improve. You know, it's probably Mississippi State's probably a lot closer to 6-6 in that scenario. The one thing that helps them a little bit is Ole Miss and Arkansas are probably still a step behind them. So I definitely think some reasons to be concerned, still some talent, and you know, right now I would definitely have Mississippi State outside the top 25.
All right, so really great stuff there from Stephen Lassen, college football editor, Athlon Sports. You can go to athlonsports.com under their college football section. Check out this entire article. He's got write-ups on all these SEC teams as well as the rest of the top 25 and national teams hanging, you know, close to that top 25 mark. So once again, Steven, I really appreciate you jumping on here. It's really great stuff. Thank you very much.
Hey, Mike, no problem at all. It's always good to talk with you, and hopefully we can do it again down the road.
Absolutely, man. I really appreciate it. All right, Shane. Once again, I want to thank Steven Lassen for jumping on the podcast here. Like I said, that guy is a damn encyclopedia of college football knowledge. There was no question I didn't ask that he didn't have an answer for, and that's just, if you know him, that's just who he is. So wanted to thank him once again, but let's jump into it. Before we get into our national championship picks here, Shane, his way too early top 25. I mean, this is pretty interesting. We're going to run it down one more time. These are the SEC teams here, Shane. Number one, Alabama, no surprise. Number three, Georgia. Number seven, Florida. Number nine, LSU. Number 10, Texas A&M. Number 20, Missouri. And number 23, Auburn. Does anything jump out to you about that list?
Well, just the fact that we got half the SEC in the top 25 again, Mike. You know, I love that. And honestly, look, we got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in the top 10. I mean, this is just a dominant conference. And I love the athlete. I mean, usually they're like spot on. I mean, this is probably one of the most accurate websites if you're getting, you know, top 25 rankings. Mm-hmm. But the thing that really stood out to me, honestly, is the Mizzou love, because I'm starting to see it a little bit everywhere here, Mike.
During my conversation there with Steven, you know, I credit him that because, you know, like I said, I think a lot of people, casual observers, obviously not Missouri fans, not diehard SEC fans, but casual observers, people outside the SEC or maybe SEC fans that don't really follow Mizzou, they're going to look at that and say, you know, what the hell? Drew Locke's gone. Mm-hmm. How is this possible? They didn't win the bowl game, you know, but they are bringing back. Now, of course, the tight end who he could be an All-American next year. He has not announced whether he's coming back or not. But if he comes back, Shane, they basically have the entire offense coming back with the exception of Drew Locke. And they got the Clemson quarterback, Kelly Bryant. So, you know, he's obviously not Drew Locke, but you're not necessarily building over there. You got a guy that's been to the college football playoff, a guy that's started for premier ACC team. And that defense, you know, they're spotty here and there, but they got a lot of guys coming back too. And they signed their weakest position, I thought, Shane, was safety. And they signed two junior college safeties. So no guarantee those guys are going to come in and be awesome. But, you know, at least that's giving you hope that they get that right. And Barry Odom's supposed to be a damn defensive guy. So eventually he's going to get that thing going.
Yeah, for sure, man.
And so how happy were you, Shane? Because I didn't catch this at first, but on my first read, I didn't catch it. When I read it again, Tennessee just outside the top 25. Mm-hmm. I know you would agree with that, but are you surprised that, you know, national writer here is that high on Tennessee coming off a 5-7 season?
I am, because this sounds like a list I would make, you know. And usually when I have Tennessee near the 25, you know, people just make fun of me. But, yeah, I'm not going to say I'm totally shocked. I think our schedule's a little bit easier next year, obviously, compared to this season.
Mm-hmm. Thoughts on Mississippi State outside the top 25, Shane? Are you agreeing with a lot of what Steven said there? I know you're kind of down on Mississippi State as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing because, I mean, obviously I love Tennessee knocking on the door, but I just don't think Mississippi State will. And that's no knock on the talent on the team. It's just I didn't see it, man. I didn't see the play calling. I see a defense that's going to be nowhere near as dominant as they were this year. Not to mention they got the West. I know this is way too early, but who do they pull from the East? Do you know next year?
Well, they always play Kentucky.
Uh-huh.
And I believe that they play Tennessee next year.
Oh, see, that's a loss. So, yeah, that's my only concern right now. It's just I want to see something. I really do think the quarterback is a great athlete. And I just hope that they do a little bit more. Maybe they need another offseason, you know, and come out with some sort of identity on offense.
because they're going to, I mean, Mike, they're going to have offense next year to win games. They can't just rely on the defense anymore, and they can't just rely on Fitz's legs. You know what I'm saying? They've got to do something. So, you know, a whole offseason, crazier things have happened. So if they come out firing and you see a brand new offense, maybe something like he was running up there at Penn State, then who knows? This, they could be right there in the mix, but I have to see it.
Now, the one team, Shane, not listed here, you told me before we recorded you wanted to talk about it, South Carolina. What are your thoughts on the Gamecocks not being anywhere near this? Listen, I say nowhere near the list. They just weren't mentioned, so I'm not really sure where Athlon will have them. And again, this is way too early. It's even called that, way too early, so things can change. But thoughts on South Carolina being not anywhere on this list at this time?
Well, just think about it. At the start of the season, we talked about South Carolina being the number two in the East, potentially upsetting the number one Georgia Bulldogs. You know, that's where we were at the start of this season. And now we got the quarterback coming back. So now you're thinking, well, they should be better. You know, they got a senior quarterback. They got players coming back. They should be in good shape. But then you look at their schedule. And I'm going to tell you what, man. Out of all the schedules I have seen next year, and I'm sure somebody's going to prove me wrong with a different one. They'll tweet it to me or something like that. But at this moment, you got South Carolina playing North Carolina to start the season. Now, that's no gimme game, but you've also got them
playing. And that's also in Charlotte, so it's like a neutral site, so it's not a home game or anything.
Exactly. I mean, then you got Bama from the West.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Alabama from the West, Mike, probably going to be number one when they play.
Mm-hmm.
You got to go to Georgia. You got to go to Missouri. You go to Tennessee. You play at Texas A&M. That's your other West opponent. And you also, oh, yeah, you got Clemson there at the end. So, I mean, you talk about a brutal schedule. I mean, this is the type of schedule that puts coaches on the hot seat. Just like that damn dog, Mike. You know, your dog's on the hot seat. I'm about to fire his ass. But you know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm just looking at their schedule, and I mean, it's way too early, but I'm only seeing five, maybe six teams that they're going to be favored going in. And that's a tall glass of water right there for old Coach Musk.
Well, before I get into that spiel, I'll say you overlooked at Missouri, which we just noted could be a top 25. They get Kentucky. Will Muschamp's never beaten Kentucky at South Carolina. So don't overlook those games. But I know I just said that, Shane, but I am not one that really reads too much into future schedules because, yes, on paper, just looking at this thing, you're right. It looks damn tough. This looks like the toughest schedule in the nation probably to me. But just don't know who's going to be good. I think people make that mistake too often looking at the schedules. Muschamp's got a lot of talent coming back, Shane, and while you and I may look at this and say, holy hell, they're hosting Alabama, that's an automatic loss.
Right.
The way they're going to look at it, Shane, is that's our opportunity. We got Alabama coming to Williams-Brice Stadium. Do you remember the last time Alabama went into Williams-Brice Stadium, Shane?
No, I don't.
They handed Nick Saban his worst loss at Alabama. It was a 14-point game. Steven Garcia went off, and that's how Gamecock fans remember Steven Garcia is that game. I mean, outside of his party antics, what have you, but
right.
Nobody gives a shit because he beat Alabama. That's while Jake Bentley's never really, yeah, he did have a good game against Clemson, but just never really been that big of a big game quarterback. He can erase all that if they beat Alabama. So I think there's other ways to look at it. Like if South Carolina's not ranked and they somehow beat Alabama, they're going to be in the top 10. You know what I mean? So
right.
I'm not ready to bury them. I see what you're saying there, but I just look at it a little bit different. Maybe we were high, you know, national media. I think you and I were kind of high on South Carolina entering the year. They disappointed. They could flip the script here. So,
well, that's true. Hell, I had Auburn winning the SEC, I think, you know, so, I mean, you just never know, but yeah, I think you look at this year and then I mean, it's going to be different teams next year. I mean, this is way too early, but I mean, that's why we got all offseason to pick these apart.
Yeah, Shane. So before we get way too into the summer already, we got a damn national championship game to pick, brother.
Hell yeah, we do.
Drake eludes the kicker. defensive play.
Etienne, the running back.
Alright, Shane, the moment of truth. I know everybody's waiting for our picks because they've been so stellar this year.
they want to see where that $100 is going, Mike. So they can fade my pick.
Yeah, so here we go, Shane. Alabama, currently a 5.5-point favorite. This number is kind of keeps dropping. Opened at 7, went down to 6, now down to 5.5. I'm seeing some books it's down to 4.5, 5 even. So depending on where you can get it, the over-under is listed at 58. And I also got a ton of prop bets here, Shane. There's all kinds of crazy prop bets you can get. Let's see. You can bet on the coin toss. Those are even odds either way you go. But here's one of my favorite ones. Will there be a touchdown of 55 yards or longer? Let's see. No is the favorite there. So I just think that's kind of interesting. First team to score, Alabama's the favorite. How about this one, Shane? Will there be overtime? If you say yes, it's plus 1,200. No is minus 2,000. So that's an interesting one. National championship versus the Super Bowl. Who will score more, Clemson, Alabama, or the Super Bowl? I don't know who the hell bets these, but these are pretty interesting. But all that to say, Shane, who you got winning the national championship, Alabama or Clemson? And give me your score. Keep in mind, Alabama's a 5.5-point favorite as we bet it here. Who you got winning on Monday night?
Mike, it comes down to one thing alone. This is the greatest conference in the country and always will be. And I think that Bama has dominated it. I think Georgia gave them a fit, but they still pulled away. These guys cannot be touched right now. Nick Saban is building the legacy down there. I'm betting everything Bama on this game, Mike. I don't care where those points are at. 5 points, 10 points, 20 points. Bama's got this thing. So I'm going over even. Let's see. I got Bama sitting at 38 and Clemson only getting 23.
All right. So there it is, Shane. Clemson's going to dominate this football game and win the national championship.
Do you think so? I mean, I think Clemson's got – yes, they've got a great defense. They've got a good quarterback. I mean, I've watched Bama all season long, and I've watched a little bit of Clemson. I don't think that there's – like Clemson's strength, I don't think is going to affect Bama as much as vice versa. Does that make sense? Like, I mean, it's not like Bama is just killing people running the ball. Mm-hmm. Tua's killing people. So – I don't know. I just think that this is not going to be even a ball game.
Well, I hope you're wrong, Shane, because normally these title games are fairly close, while the semifinals, there have been a lot of blowouts. But I will go with you here in a ways. I do think Alabama wins this game, but I do think Clemson's defense, I think it's a lot better than people give it credit for. Maybe I should just say SEC people who don't watch a ton of Clemson. I didn't watch a ton of Clemson leading up to this year, and of course we saw what South Carolina did to them, so that gave me a bad impression, but watch a couple more of their games here during the break leading up to these playoffs, and I really like their unit. They showed it there against Notre Dame. Obviously, Notre Dame and Alabama, it's a different animal, but I think Clemson's going to have some success. I think Alabama's going to have some success on defense. So my favorite in this game, not 100% confident on the pick, but I'm going Alabama 28, Clemson 24. So I like Alabama to win, Clemson to cover. But my favorite on this game will be betting the under. I'm just always a big believer, Shane, in all the storylines going into the game. It's Tua and it's Trevor Lawrence and it's these explosive offenses. That balloons those over-unders. So I'm feeling pretty confident in the under. That's my favorite bet for this one. But, yeah, I think Alabama will get it done. Go, what would it be, 3-1 against Clemson here in these playoffs. And we'll probably get them again next year, Shane, because all these damn guys are freshmen or sophomores. So get ready for another round probably.
Well, I tell you, man, I like the over. I don't know. I think it is going to be kind of a shootout. And, I mean, I'm kind of like you. It's not like I watched a ton of Clemson. But when I did, you know, the Texas A&M game, the South Carolina game, there was a lot of passing. There was a lot of yards. There was a lot of points. So I just feel like that's going to carry over. And I think, you know, I think Clemson is going to force Bama to be one-dimensional. And unfortunately for them, Tua's just gonna slice and dice, man.
Mm-hmm. All right, Shane, that's all I've got. Don't want this one to run too long. So you got anything before we hop off here?
One thing, man. I just got a review if we got time.
Sure.
All right, this one comes from BeFair90. It's outstanding. 5 stars. You guys do an excellent job and got this Razorback fan through the nightmare of 2018. I hope you guys keep it going. Well, Razorback fan, be fair. I appreciate you. I appreciate all the listeners hanging out with us. I mean, guys, this is it. This is the last college football game tonight, so I hope you guys enjoy. But it isn't our last show. We're going to keep going, and I appreciate y'all hanging out with us. And the ones that get on iTunes, give us a review, I really appreciate that as well.
Well, yeah, so before we jump off, Shane, Razorback fan, I want to give him a little bit of Arkansas content since we were looking ahead to 2019 here briefly, but I don't think, and I nailed this last year. I said Arkansas would be the SEC's worst team. I took a lot of flack for saying that from Razorback fans. I'm not out to get them, but next year I think will be a lot better. I think that the offense will be a lot more exciting. We'll start to see, and keep in mind, Shane, there's still, you know, like the SMU quarterback whose graduate transfer, what's his name, Sam Hicks, I think is his name, is particularly if they get that guy. Obviously, I don't think they're going to be an SEC contender, but I think you're going to start to see the seeds planted for what Chad Morris is trying to accomplish there. They're getting young and athletic on both sides of the ball, so I think it's going to be a lot more fun. Definitely don't think Arkansas is going winless in the SEC. I think they will be one of the more improved teams in the entire SEC next year. So there you go, Arkansas fans. There's something to look forward to for 2019.
Good, Mike. That's good stuff.
All right, Shane, thank you for joining me. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We'll catch you on the next one.
All right. See you guys. Go Vols. Okay, can we go back to when you were asking me just about the list, if any of those kind of stood out to you? Or did this anything in the list surprise you? Because I talked about LSU and Texas A&M, and that sounded stupid. So I'd like to rehash that one if I can.
Sure, Shane. Let's go back 10 minutes into the conversation here.